And welcome back to Open Lines here on Coast to Coast. Another hour to go, so we'll get right to your calls from all over the planet on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, let's go to Jake in Portland, Oregon now. Jake, it is your turn on Coast to Coast. Hi there, Jake.
Hey there, George the Egyptian Nori. You know, every time I listen to you, George, I always think about the fact that you're Egyptian.
That's No, I'm not. I'm Lebanese, but Dad was born in Egypt, but that's where they were when he kind of popped out.
For all this time, I thought you actually had an Egyptian genealogy.
No, I wish I did sometimes.
You're still a mystical guy, George. We all know that.
Yeah, I try.
Come on.
Yeah, that's
true.
Listen,
one thing I wanted to say, you asked about the state of the world, and I want to say, let's just forget about all this fear stuff and remember who's running the show. And we have to remember that everything comes from one infinite source, the angels, the demons, the aliens, the humans, Earth, space, the universe, everything's made out of God. So there can't possibly be this dystopian scenario because that's not in harmony with infinite love. And we know that. So when people wonder, well, what should we do? Like, how it seems kind of bleak. You know, world events seem kind of scary in there. That is real. But all I can say is, and I mean this in a sense that's beyond religion, just be the Jesus of your own life. Just, you know, be, as Gandhi says, be the change. Just do it. You know, just be the best that you can possibly be, because we are moving towards a heaven on earth scenario. Do you remember when the Hopi sent that representative on Coast to Coast the
mm-hmm.
last time recently, and they said that we chose the one heart path as a species?
And they're right.
That means that we're moving towards a successful human scenario. We're not moving towards elites controlling human slaves with microchips and all that stuff. If you believe that, that's going to create fear. And that's what they want. They want you to be afraid. Remember, fear is the absence of faith. Fear is the absence of faith. You let go of fear, all you have left is faith. So just stay with that faith. And so the state of the world, you ask that, the state of the world is perfect. Everything's going exactly how it should be going. It's a little tumultuous. There's definitely some suffering going on.
Right.
We're moving in the right direction.
You really feel that?
I know it from the core of my being, George, because everything comes from God. But now we're going beyond religion here. We're talking about source.
Right.
You know, bigger than religion. Everything comes from God. There's nothing. Nothing's going to take over the earth. Evil is made out of God, if you understand where I'm coming from. Everything's made out of God. Evil's never going to defeat God. Evil is made out of God. Everything's made out of God. So in that sense, we're going in the exact, perfect, right direction. So therefore, you know, when we're working in our own lives, we have to realize, hey, let's let go of fear. Let's turn that energy around and use that energy to help ourselves become better people and help our fellow man. What do you think about that?
I like that. And let me tell you something, Jake. You are one of the most upbeat people I have heard in a long, long time. You've got more energy coming out of your pores than an army of people.
Well, I am in harmony with the vibration of love. And that's recent for me because I got turned on to these authors like Wallace D. Wattles, Napoleon Hill, Bob Proctor. These are alternative century authors. Ralph Waldo Trine. You know, they wrote these amazing books, Intuity Infinite, The Science of Getting Rich, Think and Grow Rich. It's about spiritual development. And these books help me understand that we don't live in a world of lack of and limitation. We live in a world of abundance. When you look outside in the earth and you see space, all there is infinite abundance. And if there's a lack and limitation in some person's life, that's because they're not in harmony with infinite source, because there's an infinite source of supply of everything, because it all comes from God. That's really been a new, you know, concept that's been introduced to me in the last year. And it's really shaped my whole perspective. And it made me realize, hey, wait a second, you know, let's let go of the fear. Let's let go of the misunderstanding of how our world is working and remember that, hey, who's running the show here?
I like it, Jake. We got to have your attitude. Most people would get by just with that. Thanks for the call. Keep staying upbeat, my friend. Let's go to Ryan in North Carolina. Ryan, it is your turn. Hi there.
Hello. Can you hear me?
I sure can.
George, it's wonderful to be on the show, and I'm calling specifically to the topic brought up a while ago about group prayer.
Yes.
And I want to ask the listeners to join me in a group prayer, and it goes something like this. It's very simple. It's very basic. May all of the prayers ever uttered in desperation, love, pain, or fear be retroactive in past, present, and future. And may all the blood shed in ignorance and in hatred be retroactively available to those of us who truly resonate with the power of love.
Interesting. Tell me about that affirmation. Where'd it come from?
It came from, I'm very, very clairvoyant, and I'm extraordinarily empathic. And every time there is a terrorist attack, I can't sleep. And I know before the news hits that people have died and that people have died horribly. And I stay up praying and meditating. I was raised Catholic and Buddhist, so I sort of take turns talking to God in English and Japanese. And I am a firm believer in, I believe the gentleman's name was Jake, and a lot of what he was speaking about. Everything comes from the source of God, and it is only our fear and our sense of desperation driven from the hind brain that has us create hatred out of. So for instance, all of these terrorists are killing these people horribly, so it's very easy to hate them. It's much harder to pray for all the blood that they're shedding to actually serve a positive purpose.
Interesting take on that. I like
that
perspective.
Doesn't mean that I'm pro-bloodshed.
No, of course not.
That the blood has been shed, why waste it?
And let's hope it's minimal from here on in, because it's way too much. Text message, Tom, what do you have back there?
From Brandon in Delaware. I like your doctor tonight, but couldn't get through. I eat a plant-based diet, but my vice is that I eat a candy bar a day. Do you think this is okay, considering my diet?
I have a weakness of a candy bar. The Baby Ruths. I love them. I don't know why, but I do.
This guy eats one.
They've replaced my favorite Kit Kats, as a matter of fact. But, you know, I sometimes go on a streak where I'll buy the little tiny ones, and, you know, I'll pop those every day, and then I have to stay off because, you know, it kicks the glucose level up and all this stuff. And
I think he's asking, does a good diet and, you know, negate the little cheating that he does?
Well,
I think that's how he's
a little moderation I don't think is going to hurt you at all.
I think a candy bar a day, though, is kind of a lot.
Yeah. There's a lot of sugar in those things.
Yeah.
How about you? You don't eat much candy, do you?
No, I don't. I just never really liked candy too much.
You're a big vegetable guy.
I love broccoli.
You're one of the few humans, that's right, who likes broccoli.
I do like broccoli. You don't know a lot of people like broccoli?
I like it.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people who don't like it.
I don't know a lot of people that don't like it, actually.
We should do a whole show on people who hate broccoli. Have them call in.
Broccoli hotline.
Are you still getting calls from that toilet paper thing I threw out there a couple months ago? Over or under?
No, those finally stopped.
They were coming in, though, weren't they?
That was amazing. People picked up on that like
nothing. I did an entire hour in St. Louis when I was doing my Nighthawk show, and it was amazing.
On just that?
On just that. Just that.
Because it's real stuff. It's what happens to people, and, you know, it's just interesting.
You know, little things like that. All right, thanks, Tom.
Okay.
We'll get one more text from you in the last half. Let's go to Barrett in Houston, Texas now. Welcome to the show. Hi, Barrett.
Good morning, George Noir. Yes, can I please rebut what the guy said earlier about America dropping the atomic bombs? He was terribly misinformed.
You are entitled to say what you want.
Okay, I'm going to speak only facts, all of which the net will verify. First of all, McNamara and LeMay engineered bombing as best as they could, but it was not possible to surgically bomb back then. You could only high-altitude mass bomb in order to destroy a target. Low-altitude bombing was not effective. And so they dropped high-altitude to get away from the kamikazes, which would have taken all our B-29s out.
Mm-hmm.
Secondly, it was the Flying Tigers who volunteered prior to Pearl Harbor, and I want to emphasize Pearl Harbor, who defended China from what the Japanese invented, which was indiscriminate bombing of civilians, women, and children. Thirdly, when Doolittle's raid flew over Japan in April of 42, the B-25s tried to land, some have landed in China. The Japanese went over and killed hundreds of thousands of civilians, men, women, and children. Thirdly, the atomic bombs that we dropped did not kill as many civilians as the incendiary bombings that were taking place by B-29s just prior to the atomic bombs. The only difference is that the liberals hate the fact that America sent only one bomber and risked only one aircrew to do so. Fourthly, the Bletchley Park, which is only just recent history to come out, has come out in recent history. The Bletchley Park British codebreakers sent Colossus computers over to America, and we were breaking the Japanese codes, which is only just released to the media in recent years. And we knew what the Japanese were planning, and had the atomic bombs in our ships, which were already on their way over to Japan, there would have been far, far more civilians killed because of what the Japanese were planning had we not had the atomic bombs.
And the bottom line is the two nukes did stop the war.
They stopped the war, and they were the answer to American prayers who were losing our children unprovoked in this horrible war.
So let me ask you this, Barrett, though. Let's talk about today. Would you use nukes on ISIS camps or cities if you knew they were all there?
Well, there's so many factors involved that, and I'm not well enough informed on current events. I'm talking past history here.
No, I know, but would you use them today?
I think that we need surgical, yes. We need to put some surgical in there because I don't think we would have if we kept our troops over there, but we have to now. I mean, we have very small surgical weapons. And it's like Brigitte Gabrielle said, there's nothing they love more than death.
Well, would you wipe out Mecca and Medina? Their holy spots?
No, I wouldn't make it a religious.
You would not, even though they have.
Well, yeah, I don't really believe it's that religious. It's a theocracy. It's a political theocracy, and I don't place them much higher than Klebold in Denver, at Columbine High. They're just. I don't really care what they kill people for. I don't care what their claim is. They're just Klebold at Columbine High, as far as I'm concerned. But no, I would not hit any religious, because, a lot of Muslims are sincere and wouldn't hurt anybody.
Most of them are. Most of them are. I mean, and I know many. I do. They're great people. I mean, just superb, caring, family-loving, nice, friendly, doctors, physicians, lawyers. They want a better way of life. Simple as that. But I don't know. I don't know how you get to the bottom of it. It's 25 programs in a row before we even make a dent. You got to give these people hope, and they don't have that right now. They're living in squalor, and that's part of the problem. The other part of the problem is policy, and the policy of going in and taking out Saddam Hussein or Muammar Gaddafi in Libya was, I think, just fatal. You know, we lost dictators who kept a control and a reign on their countries, and everything has fallen apart since then. Everything. Let's go to Mike in Connecticut. Hey, Mike, it's your turn. Go ahead.
George, people are just nervous, paranoid, kind of whacked out lately, you think?
They are, Michael. Oh, my gosh. They are.
Geez, you walk into the bank or the gas station and the door, you open the door and everybody turns around and looks.
Well, they're uptight. They don't know if you're going to rob the place or what.
What's causing it?
Just history. I think what is happening, People are seeing these events unfold now too often, almost every other day. And the fact that, you know, through social media, everything is so close now. Everything.
Everything is so close, even. I mean, you're talking to somebody in the Netherlands on a weekly basis.
Yeah, you're doing that. Istanbul in Turkey seems so far, but we get information there instantly. It's like it's one of our city airports.
We wouldn't need to use tactical nukes on ISIS. We got plenty of stuff in storage. We got daisy. You know what daisy cutters were, don't you?
Yeah, sure do. We
got plenty of those still left from Vietnam War.
We could do the job if we wanted to, conventionally.
If we wanted to, but they're trying to, diplomatically, it's just, well, what do you expect from a country run by a bunch of lawyers? I live in Connecticut, and I know, and I'll tell you what, it's getting worse here.
Is it really?
Oh, it's horrible. People are moving out left and right.
Oh, boy.
My parents live in a town of about 4,000 people, and there's over 100 houses for sale. They've had it.
Well, it's that way all over the place. Mike, thanks for your call. Appreciate it. I'll take one more before the break, and that would be Rich in Rockland County, New York. Hey, Rich, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Hi, George. I'd like to clear up, for those that might enjoy this, the mystery of why nobody can find the two witnesses dead in the streets of Jerusalem. Oftentimes, people take a phrase like Jerusalem and just try to look at it from a physical standpoint.
Okay.
Jerusalem also means a state of consciousness. So when the two witnesses were not found in the streets of Jerusalem, Jerusalem in the streets was where you got the news. You went to the four corners. The word news itself comes from north, east, west, and south. Now today, the news or the streets are the media.
Mm-hmm.
The regular media and the alternative media, and they think that the two witnesses are dead in the streets. They're not found. So that the two witnesses who build the third sacred temple have not been found in the streets of Jerusalem. But that's not the fact at all. The fact of the matter is that one of the two witnesses is John, the beloved disciple. But it's not really John, the beloved disciple, who writes the book of Revelation. It's Michael the Archangel, incarnate in the form of John. That's been a secret for almost 2,000 years.
How'd you figure that out?
You'd have to know who I went to school with.
Who'd you go to school with?
John, the beloved disciple. How do you like those apples?
How did you pull that off?
Since I was a child, I was playing with my little trucks in the dirt with marbles in the back, and a very powerful, soft voice called me.
Ah, the voice. You're gifted, my friend. We'll be back. And welcome back to Coast. We're back with you. We're back with your open lines, our final segment. What a fast night this was, indeed. Don't forget tomorrow night's program. Investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe joins us with her monthly report of very strange and unusual stories. And we'll take one more text message in a moment from Tom for you. And let's go to the phones. We will go to Anthony in Chicago, first-time caller. Good morning, Anthony. Thanks for calling.
Hello, George. How are you this morning?
Good. Good. I hope you are, too.
I wanted to give you my take on the state of the world. You were discussing that a little bit earlier.
Sure.
I think as long as we have a government that does not care one bit about the people other than manipulating us with their ads and their, you know, schemes and scams, we're just going to keep propelling downhill. Let me give you a little analogy.
Okay.
I think, you know, your name comes up every now and then about president, and I know half of it's kind of jokingly and half of it seriously. There's people that really believe you would be an outstanding leader, including myself.
Thank you.
And I want to make a comparison with you and Donald Trump.
All right.
As different as you two people are as individuals, I think you both really love the country and would give up your success. I mean, I know you'd be the kind of guy you are. You'd be happy doing what you're doing till the end. And I think Donald Trump would be the same way. He's very successful, you know. But I think that if you were ever to, you know, go down that path, or now that he is, I see two people, and there's others, who just love the country, and they're so sad to see the state of affairs in the government. And I do not believe that Ms. Clinton is that same kind of a person. I don't believe she loves the country as her total ambition to be president. It's obvious that you know, it's about her own personal gain and power and manipulation. And I think as long as we're being controlled by this group of people who know how to play the game and have the billions to play it, we're just going to keep ascending downward. So that's my take on the world. We need to get as brazen as Trump is. I think that the guy really wants to do the right thing for the good of us, even if he doesn't know what all things are. And I think the other challenger has only one intention. What do you think about
that? Well, you may be right. Good perspective there, Anthony. And I'm going to try to get both of them on the program after the primaries, making the assumption they do get their nominations. And it'll be interesting to see who wants to take it and who'll accept. We'll see what happens there. But good analogy. I like what you said. John in Washington, welcome to the show. You're up with us. Go ahead, John.
Hi, George.
Hi there.
You know, if I had not been a person that had been reading the Bible, or especially the prophetical parts, and if all of a sudden I could just be brought to read all that, I think that I would probably, it might even almost cause you to almost fall dead if you really took it in. Because you would realize, I mean, how could you not but realize the agonies and the things that are going on in the world, and also in correlation with Great Tribulation and Armageddon and ISIS and all this stuff, you know, the coming down of Satan isn't just some bird or spirit flying down from heaven. So this whole thing about the Vatican preparing the listeners so that the Pope could baptize the aliens into the Christian faith, you know, I mean, we need to be understanding that this is such a great deception, and everybody right now is being played like a fiddle by our own government, or by those 10 kings the Bible talks about that give their power over to the beast for 1 hour and one day to deceive mankind by allowing all these things that they can use to manipulate, to deceive. They've used it for decades to become more powerful and more rich in order to also be able to basically destroy things as we know it economically, and then bring in a total new system, because it's antiquated anyways, and that's the way they look at it.
John, do you think, though, we are, in the long run, going to win?
Yes, sir, because there's no doubt about it that the Lord Jesus Christ is the conqueror and the victor. And, you know, he already defeated Satan by kicking him in the head, bruising his head. And now God's got people on the earth. Now, it's not religion. It's a truth. And he's been dealing with them in this truth. And it does away with all the inner angles and all the inner talks that you've heard before. And you just get this understanding that you just... It goes beyond. It goes into a heavenly place where even Satan can't even combat you about it anymore, because it's something that you know that you know. And on that concern, I feel so desperately in my spirit that we just better be real attentive to what's going on over the next couple of days, couple of weeks. Because something very, very, very bad is going to happen. And I don't want to cause nobody no fear or anything either. But if we don't have faith in the Creator, then we have nothing. If we gain the whole world and lose our soul, we have nothing. God doesn't want us to fear. He wants us to be of a sound mind. He wants us to understand these things that are going on are happening because it has to be brought to its head. And if not, and if the Lord doesn't return, no flesh will be saved.
Not well, I got to tell you, it's going to be taken to a head pretty soon. I can feel it. And I am amazed at how many spiritual people we have out there. It's truly huge. Tom, final text of the night. What do you got?
This is from Kelly in Arkansas. I always wonder, George, when exactly, in your opinion, did the government of the United States and the politicians stop being for the people?
Probably a long time ago.
Yeah.
Probably even before the Kennedy assassination. But I think that's when they realized that it's time for them to try to take over, and that's when they did their thing.
I thought you were going to say at the Kennedy, like after, post-Kennedy.
No, I think the whole plan was before that. You know, when they start planning his assassination, in my opinion, that's when they started planning the takeover.
You think that's like the top, like, five conspiracies of all time?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, easy, huh?
Absolutely. Lincoln's in one up there. But Kennedy's way, way up there. Bobby Kennedy, that's way up there, too.
9/11 with it?
9/11, Martin Luther King's assassination.
Yeah.
It's huge. I do need you to continue to follow up with William Pepper.
Yes,
you know,
will.
He kind of wants to wait until he gets to the Supreme Court on Sirhan Sirhan.
That's what he told me.
I don't want to wait that long. That could be...
Well, that's what he told me. He said contact him after that happens. So.
Keep chasing
him. We'll push him.
I want to go up there and do that interview and see what he has to say.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah. You know, there's something, you know, I'm going to say this publicly, but this is for you privately and Lisa. I want to start interviewing some of these very bizarre criminals around this planet. I think... just interviewing them to hear them would be a great interview. Like that BK, you know, killer mm-hmm. from Wichita, wherever he was, Topeka.
Oh, yeah.
That serial killer there. Isn't David Berkowitz, the son of Sam, still alive? I think he is.
I think he is. I had a long conversation about a year and a half ago with a guy up in San Francisco at a facility, and part of the whole thing is you have to write them because
you have to write the prisoner first.
Yeah, he has to agree before anything else is set in motion.
Yeah, you can't just walk up into a prison and say, hey, I want to interview David Berkowitz.
Too bad the warden can't just make that decision right
now. Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber, I want to interview him. I would have loved to have interviewed James Earl Ray had he been alive.
You know who I wanted to get on the show? Richard Ramirez.
He was the accused, but never convicted, or was he convicted?
No, he died in jail.
He died in jail.
Yeah. But supposedly he was a really smart guy.
Yeah. Richard Ramirez. California, right?
Yeah. He was the Night Stalker.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly.
Crazy
stuff. So many strange serial killers in those days.
But why are they all, like, smart? A lot of them are, like...
Oh, they're almost brilliant.
I have this
to
one
a point,
tape.
But something has gone wrong with them.
I have this one tape of an interview of Jeffrey Dahmer, and I'll watch it like every 3 months, and he's like so docile and so smart, and you listen to him, and it's kind of fascinating in a weird way.
Ted Bundy was a genius, but there's something wrong in their brain, obviously, to do what they did.
Yeah, it's just something is...
But that's what I want you guys to concentrate on doing too. I mean, I will go to those prisons. I want to do interviews with these people and then come back and play it on Coast to Coast.
Live show from a prison.
Well, I don't want to be live. I mean, it's not like Johnny Cash, and, you know.
You mean you turn it down if I can get a live prison show?
Well, what am I going to do there?
You're going to do the show.
What, before inmates?
Yeah, can you imagine? Fascinating.
I don't want to do it on a regular basis.
No.
My God.
I don't mean go to a prison every
Tonight
week.
Tonight we'll be from San Quentin.
Just once, I think it would be a fascinating remote to do, and I think people would be interested.
All right, let's go next. Thanks. Patrick in Ohio, it's your turn. Hi, Patrick.
Hey, George. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing. Thanks for holding so long. My gosh.
Love it. Hey, about the GP thing. It doesn't matter to me as long as it's there when I need it.
That's probably the best advice.
Yes, it is. But
Yeah, I was just wondering about that. I got a situation. I'm going to try to keep my composure here, but the prayer list. I have a son that I haven't seen in over 6 years, thanks to a bad marriage. And I don't know. I was just, you know, he's going on 21 now, I believe. But, you know, it was bad for him because, you know, his mother was, like, very manipulating and everything.
Were you too close ever?
Yes, we were close. We were, you know, like two peas in a pod, you know, through his childhood. But as soon as I decided to go on with my life, met somebody else and had another child coming, she started this, he's moving on. He's replacing you. He won't love you no more.
Oh, geez. Tainted him.
Yeah, if you ever decide to go live with him, I don't ever want to see you again, and stuff like that, and it was tearing him up, and I was just trying to back off because he was under enough pressure, but it got to the point where, you know, she succeeded in fulfilling what she threatened, and that was to turn him against my side of the family, and I just, you know, I pray, but I think I need a little bit more help.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll put that on the list for you. When was the last time you saw him? How long ago?
December 17th, 2010.
Do you know where he lives?
I got an idea that, you know, again, I don't like, you know.
Well, you're in Ohio, right?
Yes, sir.
Do you think is he still in Ohio?
Yes, he's still in Ohio. I still speak with his, great-grandfather and everything. And
well, let me tell you something. Have you been on, like, Facebook? And type his name in?
Yes, nothing comes up.
Nothing comes up. That's weird. You would think a 21-year-old would be splattered all over Facebook.
Well, he, you know.
Would he have changed his last name?
No. I mean, I found him on Twitter and stuff, but no response to nothing.
He won't respond to you?
Will not respond to me. And, there was a story, you know, she would started this, you know. You know, what makes you think you're his father anyways?
Oh, jeez.
You know, kind of yeah. Truthfully, you know, it's questionable because she wasn't a very good wife.
If you did find him, would you do a paternity test?
You know, like I told her, it doesn't matter if I am his father or not. I was there, you know, I took care of him.
You took care of him. You loved him as a little boy and everything else.
I was there.
Yeah. So. Well, what would you like us to pray for? All right, Patrick, you got it. He got a little emotional right at the end. I guess maybe you could put him on the prayer list to hope that the youngster comes around. He's 21 years old. He's a young man now. Hope he comes around. I hope that works out for you. In time, it might. Aaron is in New Orleans. Aaron, what's up? Go ahead.
Hey, George. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Hey, I'd like to talk to you for a second. I'll talk to you about my case. Back in October 2014, I was the subject of a political prosecution.
What happened?
Well, New Orleans, I don't know, you know, if you know a whole lot about the city, but we have a very corrupt city government at all levels. We have police officers in federal prison. We have former school board members in federal prison. We have our former mayors in federal prison. And we also have some people was on the city council and in federal prison.
Oh, boy. Jeez.
Yeah. So it's a great place to visit, but not really a great place to live.
No. Passing through.
Yeah. So in 2013, 2014, I had written some letters. These were like protest letters that criticized a local judge and to members of his family.
Okay.
This judge and his family members had been named in about at least 6 to 7 different news articles as having some questionable dealings. Some even had illegal dealings involving public money, nepotism, cronyism. This judge's brother is also in federal prison. And so to make a long story short, these letters criticized this judge and the members of his family who were named in these articles.
All right, and they obviously backfired on you.
Well, you could say that because this judge is also personal friends with the district attorney.
Ah,
and so
it's nice that's nice for him, huh?
Right. So in October 2014, I was charged with a crime for writing these letters, even though the letters I wrote were about newspaper articles.
What do you mean, for writing a letter, they charged you with a crime? You didn't threaten him, did you?
No, of course not. I didn't, and I wrote these letters to third parties. There were probably three or four letters in a total, and I was charged with the crime of, if you could believe this, criminal defamation.
Criminal defamation? I've never heard of that. I've heard of civil.
Right. Well, it's a little bit different. It's like the civil version. However, you can be prosecuted even for making truthful statements.
Jeez, look, we're coming up on the end of the show, but I would love for you to email me, george@coasttocoastam.com, some more information and your contact information, if you would. That's weird. That's really weird. What a night, huh? For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Borelson, George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.